Hello, and welcome to the Not-So-Secret Guide to Being a Berkeley Engineer. My name is Laura Vogt. I'm the Associate Director for Marketing and Communications for the College of Engineering and your podcast host. This week, we have Joseph Sell, Counseling Projects Coordinator from the Financial Aid and Scholarships Office. Hi, Joe. Welcome to the podcast.
Hi, Laura. So glad to be back. Thanks so much for having me.
And can you tell us a little bit more about yourself and what your role is at UC Berkeley?
Sure. So again, my name is Joe Sell. I use he, him pronouns. And I'm the Counseling Projects Coordinator here in the Financial Aid and Scholarships Office at UC Berkeley. I've been at Berkeley for a little over 6 years now. My role primarily is to counsel students on all matters related to financial aid. So that could be navigating the application process, reviewing or breaking down different types of awards, or just having a conversation to answer all of the questions that could come up through the financial aid process. So along with providing counseling, I review verifications, appeals, all the different types of financial aid documents that students are asked to submit. But also I coordinate a lot of the processes and procedures in our office as well. So such as SAP or Satisfactory Academic Progress, as well as our summer aid financial aid programs as well.
Excellent. So can the first thing that we're going to have a lot of students have questions with is, can they still apply for financial aid or fill out the FAFSA or anything along those lines?
Absolutely. Yeah. So students can still submit the financial aid applications. The priority deadline for both the FAFSA and the California DREAM Act application is generally March 2nd of each year. But students can still submit their applications after those deadlines. So again, students can submit either the FAFSA, which is the free application for federal student aid, or the California DREAM Act application. If students are wanting to apply for aid for the current summer 2021 semester, they still want to make sure they complete the 2020-2021 applications, when we're still finishing up that last academic year. Otherwise, for aid for the upcoming fall and the year afterwards, students want to complete their 21-22 aid applications.
And can you tell us a little bit more about the DREAM Act?
Sure. So the California DREAM Act application actually mirrors the FAFSA. And I guess to discuss a little bit of both the applications, both financial aid applications are used for the purpose of determining how much and what types of aid we can offer a student, particularly what types of need-based financial aid programs students are eligible for. So both applications will ask students about their household size, how many siblings are in college, some questions about theirs and their family's income. The difference between these two applications is that the FAFSA is eligible for students who are either a U.S. citizen, a permanent resident, or an other eligible non-citizen, such as a student who's been granted like asylum or parole, some of these immigration statuses. The California DREAM Act application is for a student who does not meet those criteria, but do meet the criteria for the AB 540 non-resident tuition exemption. So typically these will be undocumented students or just any other student that does not meet the FAFSA citizenship requirements. As long as they also are eligible for the AB 540 non-resident waiver, they should then instead apply using the California DREAM Act application. That's located at dream.csac.ca.gov. But again, these applications ask identical questions, and really their purpose is strictly for determining what types and how much need-based financial aid we can offer students. Students who file a FAFSA will be eligible for federal, state, and university aid. The other difference here is that students who file a California DREAM Act application are only eligible for state and university aid. So they may not have access to programs like the federal Pell Grant or federal student loans, but they do have access to other programs such as the California DREAM Loan that FAFSA filers do not.
Oh, okay. And if a student has already filled out their FAFSA or the DREAM Act and they've had a change in their family circumstances since they filled it out, is there a way to adjust the needs?
There certainly is. And I would say that's something we may see a lot this year because I will say both applications are using income from 2 years ago. So this current upcoming year is looking at income information from 2019. I know we've all seen a lot of changes since 2019. And so in the case where there has been any change in the family's income or there are other sorts of circumstances that impact the family's ability to contribute based on information that we're seeing from 2019 that's no longer applicable, they can submit what's called a family contribution appeal. That's located at our Berkeley forms page, which is berkeley.verifymyfafsa.com. Even though it says FAFSA in the name, that's for both FAFSA and DREAM Act application filers. So either student can apply or can submit this appeal for this website. The family contribution appeal basically allows families to give us an update on what their circumstances are, allows an opportunity to share what circumstances have impacted their ability to contribute, what kinds of changes they might have seen in their family income. And so typically we'll ask for documentation such as a 2019 and 2020 tax return, just so we can see if there's been any initial changes like decreases in income from the tax year. And otherwise, if there's been any more recent changes, we would ask the family to submit any other documentation that supports that. So unemployment documentation or something like a layoff notice or something where we can see there's been a change in income. Otherwise, things we can approve or review are things such as out-of-pocket medical expenses that may be significant in impacting the income that can be used for education purposes. Any other sorts of extenuating circumstances that come up, we want to look at those through the appeal. And so I would say is if that resonates at all with students to submit the family contribution appeal. And again, that's found at berkeley.verifymyfafsa.com.
And how long does it usually take to find out or for the appeal to go through?
Yeah, so we open up the appeals starting on May 1st, so they are available now. I will say we get a lot of appeals kind of at the same time very, very quickly. And so I would say generally around a 4 to 6 week turnaround for appeals just because we try to review them in the order they're received. So I think my advice here would just be to start gathering documentation as soon as possible if you think there are circumstances you would like to appeal based on, and to submit that as soon as you're able. All incoming, so new students, continuing students, this is available to all students. And so I would just say submitting the as soon as possible would be the best option just to give us that that enough turnaround time to have a result prior to the fall semester.
And so what if one of the things that's offered to them through the financial aid process is a loan? Do you have any ideas or advice for students that are trying to decide if they should take out that loan?
Sure. And I think maybe before answering that, I'll just give kind of a brief overview of how our aid disbursement works. I think that kind of goes into that decision-making process.
So, oh, definitely.
So just for starters, what I'll say is that I think it's easiest when you're looking at awards in Cal Central to look at by a term-by-term basis because we disperse aid on a semester-by-semester basis. Mm-hmm. So if students are looking in Cal Central, there's a term view link they can use for both their cost of attendance and for their award package. And I just like to use that as sort of a suggestion, an easier way to kind of break awards down term-by-term to see what you're looking at on a semester basis. The way we disperse aid is we disperse all grants and any accepted loans 10 days before the start of the semester, as long as the student's file is complete. So if all verification requirements, anything that we've asked to do over the summer is if it's all complete, we should be dispersing any grants or gift aid scholarships, any gift aid automatically, and then any accepted loans 10 days before the start of the semester. At that point, it disperses to the student's account and pays any billable expenses that are posted on their bill. So generally, when we're referring to billable expenses, we're referring to things like tuition and fees, housing if a student's living on campus, health insurance, and any items that you're being directly charged for. Now, in that cost of attendance, there are also non-billable expenses. Those are things like books and supplies, transportation, personal expenses, which is just sort of a more miscellaneous category. So other expenses that you still have as a student, but we're not charging you for them at Berkeley. And so you're still being offered aid to cover those costs, but that may be some of that gift aid, and that could be some of the loans or work study that you're being offered as well. So to answer your question, when we disperse aid, I think the easiest way to kind of get an idea of are loans a useful option would be see what you're left with after your gift aid has dispersed, if you're eligible for gift aid for the semester. After any grant scholarships you're receiving have dispersed to your student account, then start to see what your remaining billable expenses are. So do you have any remaining tuition fees? Do you have any remaining housing on your bill? Or otherwise, if your tuition fees were paid in full, did you get a refund from your gift aid? Maybe that's intended for your off-campus rent, which you're not being billed for. Is that refund enough? You know, since we're dispersing on a semester by semester basis, you're looking at about 4 to 5 months of living expenses. So for example, if you're living off campus and your rent is like $800 a month, then do you have that $4,000 to cover 5 months of rent from that refund? If not, then you may want to start looking at borrowing some of the loan or applying for work study positions or applying for outside scholarships, other ways to sort of supplement that gift aid. Or let's say if you have a remaining balance, if you have tuition and fees still due or housing still due for on campus, at that point, then maybe a loan might be a good short-term option. So then, you know, when deciding whether or not you want to use a loan, I think maybe one of the first questions would be, what kinds of loans are you being offered? There are two different types of loans. Well, there are multiple types, but the two primary types of students are offered are a federal subsidized and a federal unsubsidized loan. And again, this is particular for federal aids. This is for students that file a FAFSA. But the federal subsidized loan and the unsubsidized loan, the primary difference between the two is that the subsidized loan does not accrue any interest while the student is enrolled in school. They still have an interest rate. Both of them typically have the same interest rate, but the subsidized loan is not accruing any interest. So that could be a really good short-term option if you have just a little bit of rent that you need to pay, and maybe you might be able to pay that loan off before you graduate. A subsidized loan might be a good option because you're not going to be paying any additional interest on top of what you've already borrowed, unless you're repaying that after school. So all that to say is there's a lot of pieces to it, but I would say first off, do you have enough of your gift aid resources to cover your expenses? If not, then loans are a good short-term option. And otherwise, you know, do you want to apply for other outside scholarships to try to supplement those loans? Do you want to use work study, et cetera? There are other options there as well.
So let's talk a little bit about those scholarships. Sure. Where would be a good place to start if they want to start looking up what other scholarships might be available?
Absolutely. One website I like to suggest is scholarships with an S on the end, .berkeley.edu. That links to our scholarship connection. And one reason I really like this website is it has a filtering system. So it has different checkboxes you can select out to say, like, I'm a freshman, I'm studying engineering, I'm a US citizen, or whatever the case might be. It'll filter out, I'm an international student. You know, there's other options there as well. It'll filter out scholarships that pertain just to those criteria. And then each scholarship will have a link to its own website. Now, scholarships are going to have their own application process. So a lot of the work will be the applications and going to each individual donor and checking out what their requirements are. But the scholarships.berkeley.edu is just really good, just collective resource for gathering all those scholarships in one place. Definitely not exhaustive by any means. If you just go to the financial aid website and type in scholarships, it'll give you some other sort of general links as well. They'll link to some more federal resources or more just international resources, things like FastWeb and those other sorts of websites. But I really like to suggest scholarships.berkeley.edu first. It's just a good landing place and a good starting place.
And we had talked a little bit, or you had mentioned work study amongst some of the options that students might have. So what is work study and how do you find a work study position?
Sure. So work study actually functions very much like a regular position. The main difference here is that a lot of employers, both on and off campus, will hire only from students who have work study eligibility. So it basically opens up your sort of pool of jobs that you can apply for. But in a sense, it works the same way as a regular job. You're paid a paycheck like a standard job. It doesn't pay through your account like other financial aid resources do. You get that pay in hand. You still have to go through the hiring process. You have to apply for the job. You still have to interview, get hired, whatever the employer requires. All that's still very much the same. For work study, students will typically have a maximum work study award that they can earn during that year. The typical standard we would offer is about $4,000. That could vary depending on the student's eligibility. But if, for example, you have a $4,000 work study offer, that means that you can earn up to $4,000 from your work study position or positions. If you have multiple positions, that's a possibility as well, up to that $4,000 amount. In some cases, there's even room to increase that further. So if that's the case, definitely feel free to reach out to us and see if that's an option. But in general, it really works like a regular job. It's just you have more opportunities because there are more employers that hire specifically from work study.
And so it sounds like when you're doing the payout for the financial aid that it happens once a semester. So that means students are going to have to know budgeting to make sure that those funds last those 4 to 5 months. Do you have any resources or know of any way for that students can learn more about budgeting?
Yeah, that's absolutely correct. And so there are two really good resources I like to suggest. And the first are our Bears for Financial Success, or our BFFs. Bears for Financial Success are a peer mentoring group. They are students who will help other students in advising with those exact sort of topics like budgeting, credit, debt management, those sorts of things. Any of the after financial aid has dispersed to you, what do you do from there? You know, what are the things you need to know from a strictly financial perspective, right? Bears for Financial Success help with exactly that. And there's their fellow students. So they have gone through all of this from the lens of a student. They understand this from the same perspective as other students, and they're great at being able to work through and explain that. And so that's just one option. They have walk-in options as well as appointments. Just going on the financial website, just typing in BFFs, you should get right to their website. I'm going to also say the other resource I would like to suggest is called iGrad. This is more of just a personal financing tool. It's available to students as well. It's more of a self-steering, kind of software that you can use, but that's another option as well. Both of those are linked from Cal Central. If you're in Cal Central, on the right side of the My Finances page, there is a tab that says Financial Planning and Literacy. You can find the links to both the Bears for Financial Success as well as iGrad located there.
And since we're talking a little bit now about Cal Central, in Cal Central, they have this task list of all the different things that they have to do. Financial aid and aspects of financial aid are going to be part of that task list, right?
Absolutely. Yeah. And there's going to be a lot of different tasks you might see there. So you might see financial aid related tasks. You might see admissions related tasks or residency. Everything's kind of posted there. The My Finances tab is really the key for any financial aid requirements that you might need. And some things that you might see there could be, I guess I'll say the major task that many students are required is the verification. Mm-hmm. That's a very common one. And verification can mean a lot of different things. So that could be our standard. I think when students think of verification, we think a lot about the standard sort of income verification, requesting copies of a tax return. There's a form you would complete. That's sort of the standard verification. But that could include all sorts of other things. We might have to verify other sorts of elements that determine eligibility, such as like selective service or citizenship status, those sorts of things. So there's a host of things we might have to verify. All I would say is if you see that verification task on CalCentral, definitely go back to that berkeley.verifymyfafsa.com website we mentioned. It'll link right there from your CalCentral. But that's where any of these requirements where you would actually take action and complete those through that portal. But verification is a big one you might see. Some other tasks that could show up. SAP, Satisfactory Academic Progress. That's particularly going to be for continuing students who've already been here usually a year or more. Students have to make sure they're meeting SAP requirements. If students have submitted an appeal, any appeals that are on file, they'll be listed there as a task as well. If Cal Grant, sometimes Cal Grant has requirements over the summer, so things like verifying your high school graduation or if you're transferring from another school, there may be Cal Grant requirements that need to be done through the Web Grants website. But yeah, in general, just making sure all of your admissions, residency, financial aid, making sure all those tasks are complete. That way we can disperse on time in the fall.
And when we get closer to the beginning of the semester, they might see something that says CNP. What's that mean? And is that something that they need to worry about?
That's correct. So CNP is an Office of the Registrar Policy. It stands for cancellation of non-payment, cancellation for non-payment. So what that means is that if students have not paid at least 20% of their tuition and fees for the upcoming semester, they're at risk of being canceled for non-payment of their tuition and fees. Now that said, financial aid recipients who have enough gift aid or enough financial aid resources to cover that 20% or more generally should not be too concerned about this message because we'll disperse aid, like we mentioned, 10 days prior to the start of the semester, which is well before the deadline for fees. So if you know all of these verification or any other task requirements are complete, like we've mentioned, and there is at least enough gift aid, kind of like we mentioned earlier, going back through your CalCentral, looking at that term view, looking at your gift aid for the semester to say, okay, is this more than enough to cover my tuition and fees for the term? If it is, and your file is complete, then very likely you're not going to have to be concerned about the CNP message because you are going to have that aid to cover your tuition and fees in full. Or at least enough to cover that 20%. If you don't have the resources to cover that, you know, you may have loans offered. That might be an option to meet that 20%. Or if not, another option that there is the co-payable emergency loan for fees. That is it's a short-term loan, basically borrowing against your student account. All it really does is it's paying 20% of your fees with another type of basically another type of loan that you still have to pay back in the end anyway. It doesn't change the amount of fees you owe. You actually end up owing the same amount of money. It just kind of puts off that 20% to a later date. So that's another sort of option for students, is sort of a last-term option if they don't have aid to cover that 20%. What I will say is there has been some flexibility with this in the past, but I would still just suggest students to plan moving forward that this policy will still be in effect in future terms.
And you talked about the satisfactory academic progress. Yeah. So the SAP, what does that mean? Like, what do you have to do to show your SAP?
Yeah. So SAP requires, there are three main requirements to SAP. The first is that you must complete at least 67% of all of your cumulatively attempted units. You have to maintain a GPA of a 2.0 or higher if you're an undergraduate student, or a 3.0 or higher if you're a graduate student. And you can't attempt more than 180 cumulative units as an undergraduate student. Generally the 67% requirement and the 2.0 are sort of the main pieces. 180 is a lot of units. Some students do get there eventually with double majors, that sort of thing. But the primary two are the percentage and the GPA. So we measure SAP at the beginning of each year. Typically it's before each fall. We're going to start doing it before each summer, but it's still going to be for the capturing your coursework from the summer, fall, and the spring. So we're looking at a cumulative host of coursework. So that'll also include any transfer units that you've brought in, students who are transfers, any units that are accepted count as both completed and attempted. So it kind of helps maybe boost that percentage a little bit. But in general, we measure this prior to each year. If you are meeting all three of those requirements, then your eligibility for financial aid continues on into the next year. If you're not meeting any of these three requirements, then students would be asked to submit an SAP appeal in order to appeal for aid eligibility for the upcoming academic year.
And is there any financial aid if you need to buy a computer, or does that need to be worked into your overall program?
So we have what's called a cost of attendance adjustment request. This is an option for students if there are any other educational expenses that are not currently listed in their cost of attendance, or if any of these items that are currently in the cost of attendance, they're spending more than what we've budgeted for. A computer is a great example of this. So we don't automatically budget for a computer each year because we don't really know when during the student's career they're going to want to purchase a computer. So students can make this request that we will add the computer purchase into their cost of attendance through the cost of attendance adjustment request. Now, what that does is it increases the cost of attendance, which then increases the amount of aid we can offer, But in general, that type of the additional aid we offer comes from either usually additional loans or work study. It generally does not increase the gift aid that a student receives. So if you're interested in like borrowing, say, additional subsidized loan or using work study, or in some cases, you may have a lot of outside scholarship that could be maybe impacting the gift aid you're getting from the university, or you want to try to utilize some of these other outside scholarships that you have, the cost of attendance adjustment is an option to build that computer purchase into your budget so that we can offer more aid to cover that cost. So that would be really an option I would suggest if students are needing to purchase a computer. The cost of attendance adjustment is a good option. I will say too is that last year we had some additional funds that were allocated for computer purchases that were not on loan funds. I don't know how that will continue in future years, but I would still say if you are in need of that resource, definitely still feel free to submit your request and then we'll take a look and then we'll offer whatever aid resources we can. But in general, that's typically going to be loans or work study.
And what happens if during the academic year a student needs emergency funds? Is there more emergency financial aid?
Yeah, and I think just to expand a bit more on the adjustment request is, so since that can cover the computer, but that could also be for rent. So say, for example, your rent is greater than what you're budgeted for. That could be another way to get access to more aid to help meet those costs and try to reduce those circumstances. But from a more emergency perspective, one thing I like to suggest is the basic needs holistic support application. So we partner very closely with the Basic Needs Office. If students are going through any circumstances where they need assistance with food or shelter or medical expenses, those sorts of things, my first suggestion would be to refer to the Basic Needs Office. And we have, again, the application is called the Basic Needs Holistic Support Application. It basically looks through all the different kind of categories of basic needs, does an entire review of what the student's needs are. And then we look at that to see if there are any additional programs we can either get the student in touch with, or if there's other emergency funding that we can provide to help address some of those needs. So that would be my first suggestion. If any students are encountering any issues with meeting their basic needs, definitely to refer to that application, or just to reach out to us as well. And we also have counselors that work specifically with the Basic Needs Office and can tune into some of those more specific questions. But also, we mentioned the emergency loan program. That's another sort of resource as well. There is the emergency loan for fees. There's also a living expenses emergency loan. What this would be is it's basically like, again, borrowing against your student account. Say, for example, that you needed a short-term loan of $700 to maybe to cover the remainder of rent or something like that. You can borrow the $700. It would then be refunded to you, but you would also have a $700 charge on your student account. So basically, you would get a refund, but you would still have to pay that back within 60 days to your student account. There's no interest, so it's an interest-free loan. Really, the only impact is that if it's not paid, it can, of course, cause holds on your account that could impact registration in future terms. But in general, this is a good sort of, you know, last-term, you know, short-term option if you need that as well to receive any additional emergency funding if needed.
And if students want to make an appointment because they're having problems figuring out the paperwork or they're just feeling insecure about what they need to do about it, what's the best way for them to actually be able to talk to someone?
So I would say if students have any questions, to definitely connect with us through Cal Student Central first. So studentcentral.berkeley.edu is the website for Cal Student Central. So we see students through phone calls, there are online cases, and there's also a callback advising. So it kind of mirrors what we were doing with in-person advising while we were on campus. So Cal Student Central advisors can answer questions not only about financial aid, but also billing, registrar, admissions. And so a lot of times those questions intersect. And so Cal Student Central advisors are great about being able to answer all of those from a very sort of holistic perspective. That said, there are often more in-depth conversations that need to happen about financial aid. And in that case, Cal Student Central can also refer you to a financial aid counselor. We can have those more in-depth conversations, more specialized sort of advising sessions about, a specific appeal circumstance or something else that may just be impacting your ability to cover your fees or just any other questions you have. You know, we can always have those more in-depth conversations at the counseling level as well. So from a starting place, I would just say studentcentral.berkeley.edu, and that will show up a different options for getting in contact with an advisor or a counselor.
What's your biggest piece of advice for students about financial aid and scholarships?
I think my biggest piece of advice right now is read your emails, which sounds a little goofy, but I say that it's very important because financial aid communicates a lot through email. We see that a lot of communications, we're reaching out to students all the time, and electronic communication is simply the most effective way to do that. And so we see a lot of emails. My suggestion is to read them. If you see anything from financial aid, just take a look at it and see what it is. And if you don't know what it means, ask us, because a lot of times there could be important nuggets of information out there that you need to see. And we just want to make sure you're not missing any communications or anything like that. So definitely checking emails, monitoring Cal Central for any additional messages, tasks, changes in your awards, that sort of thing. But in general, any emails, and if you have any questions about it at all, definitely feel free to let us know so we can look at it further.
Well, thank you so much, Joe, for stopping by today and joining us again. I know financial aid, it's such an important part of college planning, and there's often a lot of questions about aid packages and like what's going on. So your time, I really appreciate it.
Absolutely. So glad to be here again. Thanks for having me.
And thank you everyone for tuning in today. If you've got any more questions, make sure you check out the financial aid website. And we're going to have links to everything that we talked about on our podcast page, engineering.berkeley.edu/ESS podcast. And I look forward to podcasting with you again next week. Thank you.